Welcome to Dead House. I am Dylan.
Greetings. I'm Nathan.
Okay, for those not listening, this is like episode 58 and I just fucked up the intro where we started rolling.
Anyway, how are you?
Rough. Yeah, well, man, I'm good. It's almost 6 p.m. on a Monday, but it was my RDO. So the real question is, how are you?
I'm like 95% better. My voice probably, I don't know how my voice sounds.
Sounds better than last time.
Well, listening back to that episode, the Cabin in the Woods episode, it sounded a lot better than I thought it would. And now I wish I sound like that at all times.
I told you, you got to record a bedtime story when you're sick.
Yeah.
You got to have a hit on your hands.
I'm going to go chase sick people around and be like, Edge, can you just cough on me real quick? I got to record an episode.
Oh, God. So this is the second time we've seen each other since our last recording, though. We had our monthly friends group dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Milky Lane, which is like a hip-hop inspired burger bar in the city.
And it was your suggestion, right?
Yeah, my suggestion, and I was the last one there.
Yeah.
Running late because I got changed after work. But
yeah, you were running late, man, because you finished work at 5. You also set the time. You made the booking for 6 p.m.
Oh, I think Alex booked it. We suggested 6 because I was like, I can go straight from work.
You suggested 6.
But I fucked everyone over. I changed my mind. That's my bad.
We didn't fuck us over. We started eating without you.
Yeah, I got there. Well, I did tell you to eat. But yeah, it wasn't too bad. But the night before that, I went to Eat Street for a friend's 40th, which is kind of like a big, I guess, I don't know how you describe it. It's like this.
It's just like a big open food market, right?
Yeah, food market. That'd be the best word. Yeah, lots of different like stalls and food trucks with all sorts of desserts and meals and cuisines. And yeah, it was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I also finished reading Ring by Koji Suzuki.
Wow, I think you've probably read 2 books in the time it's taken me to read The Ruins.
Well, I've just started The Idiot by Fyodor Dostoevsky. Yeah,
God.
So I'm in like, for the long haul now.
Yeah, that's a long one.
Yeah, I picked this up for a couple bucks at a local, it wasn't an op shop, it was just a secondhand bookstore. And I honestly did not know it was based on a book. Or if we mentioned that in the Ring episode, or the episode we mentioned Ring.
I think we mentioned it, yeah.
I must have just forgotten, but it was quite different to the film adaptation, by the way. Like, the main character in the book is a man.
Okay.
And there's no girl that comes out of a TV, which
Wait,
is
what?
Like the most the memorable part.
That's the ring, is she comes out of a TV. What does she come out of?
Yeah. Well, you know how in the film you watch the tape, it ends and then you get that call,
mm-hmm.
and then you got a week and she appears and you die by looking at you like a Medusa style attack. Well, in the book, when your week's up, you just get another call. And when you answer it, you just hear this like buzzing sound and you have a heart attack and die.
Okay. I was going to say, I suppose that makes sense and is good, because a problem with the movie is, what if you're just not near a TV?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You can't crawl out of the TV.
Yeah. Way more anticlimactic, but I guess the film had to be more visual.
Or are we like sort of Mandela affecting ourselves here? She doesn't always climb out of a TV. I think she only climbs out of it in like that one scene.
Oh, yeah. It's the final scene.
Yeah. So I've just kind of taken that as her whole character, but no, she does that once.
Hmm.
So never mind, I owe you an apology.
Unless
but back to
American...
that, what if you just don't answer the phone the second time? You don't die, you're immortal?
Yeah. I was going to say, unless in the American remake, it happens more than once. Like, they show every character's death instead of just one.
Maybe, I don't know.
Anyway, what have you been up to?
Not too much, not too much at all. I had to watch this movie kind of late because very busy. And this is it. All
that's
done.
It.
That's the only thing I have done.
Well, look, Ring
I fixed
was kind
my
of
car.
A...
My car was having issues and I fixed it.
Oh, nice. Good man. I know very little about cars. I can probably fill them up and change a tire. That's about it.
Neither do I. My father's a mechanic, so he was able to show me the ropes.
Yeah, very good. He's even taught me a few things over the years, so shout to Nathan's dad. Ring was kind of a funny tie-in, by the way. So the film we're doing today is the Haunted House classic Poltergeist.
I thought you were just going to say The Haunting of Hill House. I was like,
no.
What happened? Okay, Poltergeist.
The Haunted House, that film we were talking about in Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah. Probably the epitome of the Haunted House genre, really. Like, this is the one.
Yeah, yeah. So 1982, the way this ties in is just old TVs, which these two films have probably ruined, like, tube TVs for me now.
Cathode rays, I believe they're called.
Yep. But yeah, Poltergeist. See, I had seen it like a couple times before doing it for this pod, and I just remember finding it funny because it was kind of dated.
Okay.
But rewatching it this week, I was like, man, it's good. What did you think?
I'll be honest with you. I was let down.
Okay. Is it because of its, like, status?
I think so. I think because it's hard not to hype up, like, Poltergeist, the movie. Mm. And I'd never watched it. And it's Steven Spielberg, like, not directed, but had a very heavy hand in it.
Yeah,
and Toby Hooper?
Yep.
Was that his name? Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't the movie I was expecting. It was kind of... And it should have been. Like, it very much is a Steven Spielberg, like, style movie because he wrote it as well, right?
Yeah.
It's, like, very family core, like, and it's very, like, oh, as long as you can come together as a family, you can overcome it.
Yeah.
Isn't exactly my kind of movie.
It's definitely got a weird tone,
yeah,
this film. It's not, like, all-out horror. Like, I would say maybe the first and final act of horror. But mm-hmm. the middle is kind of just like whimsical.
Yeah. I would say, and this is going to sound weird, but it's like family horror because I imagine you should not watch this with your children. I'm sure it would traumatize them.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's in the same vein as Jaws where it's like, it's not a horror movie. It's a family movie with horror in it.
Mm. I agree. And I think you're right. That's just a Spielberg trait because I felt that way with Gremlins.
Yeah.
Like it's PG and you probably shouldn't show a kid a movie where a gremlin melts in a water fountain and they drop the bombshell that Santa isn't real. But I don't know, it scared me as a kid, but now I love it. So
yeah,
that's just Spielberg.
Maybe it is because I watched it so late and because all the effects are so dated. A lot of the times in the movie, I felt like I like what they're doing. I just don't like how they're doing it.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't like how it looks.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
All right, I guess we'll break that down as we go into it. But to pitch this in a single sentence, a family fights to retrieve their daughter from another dimension after she is abducted by ghosts who speak to her through the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I could not stop thinking of The Simpsons watching this because the very first Treehouse Horror episode has a segment called Bad Dream House that I quote daily. That's the one where it's the, all right, goodbye. I kept seeing parallels to this and
that Treehouse of Horror episode is probably the like instigator of the myth that I fell victim to.
Yeah, okay.
That this movie, like in the movie, it took place on an ancient Indian burial ground. Whereas no, in this movie, it's just a regular cemetery.
Yeah, yeah. That is an old trope, I think, though, of horror films.
Yeah, but I thought Poltergeist is like the one that did it.
Oh,
that
no.
That was the one it like either created or projected it into the mainstream.
Yeah.
But no, it had nothing to do with it. And it's like, maybe he mentions like ancient Indian burial ground or something.
I think so. Yeah. There's some line of dialogue that they say that. But yeah, anyway, a bit of background on it. Like you said, directed by Toby Hooper, the man behind the OG Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Salem's Lot. Written by Steven Spielberg, who produced it, and he was essentially co-director from all accounts I've read.
Yeah, there was some controversy, I think, because he was still working on... What was he working on at the time?
Was it E.T.?
I don't know if it was E.T. or...
Like, it was locked into a contract that prevented him from being credited as a director?
Yeah, and he wasn't meant to direct it, but then some people think that he was very heavy-handed in directing.
Mm.
And so there was, like, some inquiries and investigations.
Yeah, yeah. Was there a lawsuit, or did they just kind of...
I don't think there was a lawsuit. And I think I think all the, like, the crew and the cast and stuff have come out and been like, no, it definitely was, like, Toby was the one directing.
Mm.
And Steven was just kind of there to, like, uphold his original vision.
Yeah. Like you said, you can totally see Spielberg's influence.
Mm.
But there are other, like... Toby Hooper trademarks I noticed throughout that I'm like, oh yeah, I can see that he was the man behind the camera in this scene, okay, or something like that.
Fair.
Also co-written by Michael Grace and Mark Victor.
Oh, there you go.
Starring Jo Beth Williams, Craig T. Nelson, Beatrice Straight, and Heather O'Rourke as the young Carol Ann.
Mm-hmm. I do not recognize any of those names at all.
Yeah, I can't say I've seen any
Maybe
of them in anything else.
Maybe Craig T. Nelson, but I don't know what else he's been in.
Yeah, he looked kind of like Kevin Costner, but okay. Can't say I'm familiar with the name or anything else I might have seen him in. And sadly,
not to interrupt, but you would recognize him as an old man.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
This
is just for you, not for the listeners, but that's what he looks like now.
Okay.
I don't know about you, but I've definitely seen him in things old man.
He kind of just looks like a blank canvas.
Anyway.
Sadly, I believe Heather O'Rourke died at the age of 12. So I think she was in...
Was that the misdiagnosed Crohn's disease or was that the murder?
There was some kind of stomach sickness, yeah, yeah, okay, that killed her. But I think she was in all three. She was at least in one and two.
Okay.
But yeah.
Because this movie is like famous for people thinking it was like a haunted movie and a haunted set.
Mm.
Do you know about all that stuff?
I've probably heard it peripherally, but okay, I don't know the details.
Yeah, I haven't like dived deep into it, but it's just... Because there were like a series of deaths that happened in like short period of time after the movies came out.
Oh, and okay. Like The Exorcist.
Yeah, and there were some incidents and stuff like that. So people have gone to say, oh, and I think as well because either one or a couple of the skeletons that were used in the set for the movie were real skeletons.
I did read that, yeah.
And so people were thinking, oh, that's, you know, that's another reason. That's why it's cursed.
Yeah.
Which I think is bullshit and kind of it made more of a marketing hype.
Yeah. You didn't tell me this film was built on an ancient Indian burial ground. Poltergeist was made on a budget of $10.7 million and went on to gross $121.7 million.
And that is, if my math is correct, successful.
Yeah, that's...
Like 10 bagging it.
That's wild. And look, even just having Spielberg's name attached to it, I think would have been enough to bring people into the theaters.
Yeah. How many of those movie dollars were traumatized children though? Like who took their children in because it's a Steven Spielberg movie? It's like, oh, let's go watch another, well, I don't know, what surely, else he'd done by then.
I was going to say, surely they learned their lesson from Jaws.
Yeah, good point.
Even though that was like his only second or third film. Mm. But also, Carol Ann died in the first act of the original script. And was, like, haunting the house for the remainder of the film.
Carol Ann?
That's the little girl.
Oh, I thought it was Caroline.
That's no, just, Carol Ann.
Me mishearing their accent.
Carol Ann.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah,
Carol Ann.
That would have been a very different film. And I don't know if they would have gone for more, like, a heartwarming, wholesome vibe. Or whether they would have kept it, like, a, as you say,
well,
family horror.
Well, it kind of depends how you look at the movie. Because it kind of plays that way anyway.
She
crosses over into the spirit world. She's essentially dead.
They do retrieve her, though.
Yeah, and I guess they do go out of the way to say, like, the one thing she has is her life force.
Mm.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. And the moving stake and the chair sliding across the kitchen floor was done with wires below a constructed set, which I thought was pretty cool.
Nice.
Because I was watching that stake, and I'm like, how the fuck are they doing that? Because it even, like... arches its back like a worm, like, ah, mm-hmm. Oh, man, it was cool. And like you said before, I don't even think it's rumors. I think they legit had at least a real human skeleton in the mud pit, the swimming pool scene. And I don't think they told Jo Beth Williams until after they shot it as well, which is pretty rough. Otherwise, they may have been genuine screams of terror. And like I said before, it does have a lighthearted tone for much of this film. Like, despite the strange occurrences that are outright paranormal, like, they make a game with the chairs.
That
mum's,
caught
like,
me
laughing.
Off guard. That was so weird.
Yeah, yeah. Because it could be, like, one of those instances where something freaky happens and you don't know what to make of it, so you just laugh it off. But she was like, oh, look. Like, the father comes home, she puts, like, a helmet on the daughter. She's like, oh, watch this. And just, like, slides over to the other side.
I've got to give it credit, because something I hate about, like, haunted movies or ghost movies is when, like, it does things, but then they're not sure if they're real or they can't prove it to other people. And it creates this, like, paranoia, I guess. But I got to respect it for just, this is what is happening. These are the paranormal experiences, and they're just happening so matter-of-factly.
Yeah.
They're not trying to hide it. It just is.
Yeah, yeah. It's also like when they first bring the paranormal investigators over the bedroom door, and like there's a compass like playing a record, a lamp screws itself in. Like it's like funny. It's not scary in that moment.
It's almost like something from Ghostbusters, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. But then I guess kind of like the first act, it ends up being like... all out horror, like by the end of it again. So it's just a weird kind of evolution of this film. And I kind of see it as being commentary on fear of death, because you've got like the old woman, the parapsychologist, who sits down with like the mother and son describing her theory, how, you know, the whole unfinished business thing, or like sometimes they're taken abruptly and they're left as wandering souls, whatever. But then, like you said before, you've also got that sort of reliable message of love overcoming evil in this film as well, which is a good kind of wholesome ending to a horror film. But there's also like the demonic entities that are in the house as well. Like not only do you have the kind of apparitions floating down the staircase and they're just like people from past times that are lost, you've got like that spindly white ghost that comes out of the closet door and the giant skull head and you know, the thing that screams when the mother like opens the door briefly and slams it shut. Like, so it's an interesting kind of battle of good and evil and light and dark, which we'd love to see. And like I said before, the company that the father works for built this like new housing estate on an old cemetery, but unbeknownst to him, you only moved the headstones.
That was good.
I thought that was a bit much. Because
I thought it was fine.
I liked that that's what they did, because then the penny drops and you're like, oh, they're fucked. Mm-hmm. But the fact that like the audience kind of already works that out for themselves and he just screams it over and over again in the guy's face. I was like, you could have like at least worded it differently in the script.
You need it for the people in the back row that can't quite see, aren't paying attention.
Yeah, yeah. But
are skeletons coming out of the ground all of a sudden?
Because that was cool, man, when the earth's just erupting with coffins. Oh, shit. But yeah, no, it's a good plot point, because it definitely gives, you know, even if you don't really believe in that stuff, it gives like a reason to why the occurrences are debatably happening in this specific house. But I also like that the film kind of opens with this all-American family in like a picturesque suburban neighborhood where you've got kids playing with remote control cars on a sunny day. All the guys are over having beers, watching football. And I noticed as well, particularly in like those opening scenes, that all the characters, at least the family and their friends, are dressed in red, white, and blue.
That classic American,
yeah. Yeah.
They are the classic American nuclear family.
Yeah, that's right. The patriotic costume. Yeah. So I thought that was a nice touch. And then everything, like, quite literally, like this, there's a storm coming, and everything gets dark and dreary for the remainder of the film. So, yeah, I thought that was a nice touch.
Look at you, color theory, man.
Yeah, and you also get those the bad omens, like the dead canary, was it? Carol Ann's bird, which at first I didn't really know, like what that was there for, apart from just a sign that like some bad things are coming. Or like an analogy of canary in the mine where it knows something's wrong before everyone else does.
Yep.
But I guess on my theory of having the film sort of be a metaphor for everyone's fear of death, it could have been a way to introduce death to like young children and in a way that's like not as traumatic. Because the way that she's speaking to Carol Ann when she breaks the news, she doesn't kind of like water it down and sugarcoat it. She's just like, yeah, no, this is what's happened and it's okay. And I thought that was kind of powerful.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of what pets are for, isn't it? That's what I've heard people using pets
well,
for.
Well, I like having a pet because I love animals. It's not to prepare myself.
Yeah, but it's not like that's what they're for, but it's just, it's good to have that for kids because then they get the first experience.
I see what you're saying, yeah. And I guess you also had like the clown doll, which, man, I don't like clowns and I don't like dolls. When it's a clown doll and it's like life size for that kid, like the moment you see it in the first act, it's
you
like
know something
something's going to happen with that damn clown doll. Yeah.
I also finally know where fucking that scene from Scary Movie 2 comes from.
Yeah, it fucking ruined that for me. Yeah. But I'll be honest though, watching this again, because I'd only seen it like once or twice before this week, I was like, man, does something happen with the clown doll or am I just thinking of Scary Movie 2? So I was glad that eventually it does, yeah, like try and choke the kid.
Yeah.
But
back to the canary though. I thought something I've just realized and maybe I'm reading too much into it.
Right.
But it kind of predicts the movie, right? Like when they bury the bird in like their garden. It's like, hey, bury it, have a nice burial. And then I think one of the next shots is it's getting torn up because they're putting a pool in.
Oh, and doesn't the dog try and dig it up?
The dog tries and digs it up, but then later, one of the guys with the excavator is like digging it up.
Yeah, interesting.
And so that kind of like mirrors the movie where they're using a burial site to just pave the way for a new thing, for like a luxury.
Perfect. I totally missed that, but that would 100% be intentional.
There you go.
Yeah, nice. Also, I quite like the bent cutlery when they have breakfast. Like the kids are just fucking around and then he just like holds it up and it's all twisted and everything. That was kind of cool. Just a nice little like unexplainable event early in the film that's not like malicious yet.
Not as over the top as all the stairs checking. Checking? What? Stacking.
Oh, dude.
Did I say stairs checking?
You did say stairs checking. That's what I was like, what the fuck are you saying?
Chairs stacking.
Yeah, dude. That iconic one shot is one of my favorite scenes of all time in any horror film. I don't know how the fuck they did it.
I would imagine. Okay, here's how I would do it. I would have super light chairs glued together.
Mm.
And then you just pan away. And you just pull the other chairs away. And then put up this super light one. And then that's done.
See, that's what my dad said when we were watching it. But I don't know. Because I wondered if maybe... Because it would have been a soundstage for sure. And I wondered if maybe that half of the room, they just like spun around. Or like wheeled off and wheeled something in. And they just muted that scene in editing and like dubbed it in ADR.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's got to be how they did it.
Yeah, one of the two, but it's so
what
good.
What they did was they actually just got a poltergeist on set to stack the chairs.
They had a medium that they could direct. But yeah, it's so good because it's a one shot, which is always nice, but it's kind of quick as well. Like it doesn't leave enough time for the viewer to believe that they just had some like... you know, gaffers there, like quickly constructing this set while she's turned away. And yeah, it's just, it's so well done. And of course, you get the quotable line, "They're here, the little girl."
I don't know how I feel about that, I'll be honest with you.
Had you heard that before this film?
I'd heard it, but not in this movie. I think I'd probably heard it parodied or quoted in other places.
Mm.
And so I guess, you know, everyone immediately was like, "This is super iconic, let's steal it."
Yeah. Yeah,
but I don't know. I don't know if I like it or not. I think it's maybe just kind of corny, kind of cheesy.
It's kind of hit that same level now as I See Dead People.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it's just because I've been so like desensitized and bashed across the jaw with it.
It would have been eerie, like first watch.
Yeah, maybe.
But now, 'cause it's over referenced, it's lost its edge.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of the white mist or whatever that kind of comes out of the TV static as well and like shoots into the wall. Like, before she says that line.
I mean, like, you need it, though. Yeah. Do you mean, like, the execution of it? Like, just because it's the effects? Because it was the 80s.
I know. But there are, like, other moments, like the steak and the chairs, for example, that I absolutely love. It's just that. I guess because that's the one that was digital.
Yeah.
And the others
were
practical.
It's kind of hard for them to practically do white figures coming out of the TV and going off over the
ghostly hand. Yeah, that's fair. But after that, because that's kind of like the night of the storm when everything kind of ensues from then on, it does escalate relatively quickly. Like, you know, after this point and after like the games and everything, all of a sudden the son is eaten by a tree and the daughter is sucked into her closet.
Yeah.
So it picks up real quick.
I wasn't expecting that turn and it. Almost like a goofy turn. Like, why he is getting swallowed by a tree.
Wampin' Willow up there. Up in here.
That's crazy.
Although, I did read that I think they were, like, childhood fears of Spielberg's. And that's why he wanted them in there. Like, I don't know. I feel like I've seen, like, creepy trees at least casting scary shadows in other films before. But, I mean, the whole room getting, like, blown into this closet with this bright light emanating. Like, that was just... creative. Like, I can't say I've seen that too often before.
Yeah, no.
And like I said before, like, the father enlists these paranormal investigators to come suss it out. And what I really like about this flash forward, because they don't sort of say how much time has passed from memory, but you can just see that it's lived in and they've just kind of accepted this strange new life.
Yeah.
And he's like haggard and drawn. He's smoking and drinking at all hours of the day. The family, like you said before, is just so matter of fact. Like, oh yeah, you know, these lights will dim twice more in a couple seconds. Like, oh, we hear her better on this station. Like, it's so, they're so accustomed to everything now. And I really like that. It's, it removes kind of the fear element at this point in the film, which is what I mean. Like the bulk of it in the middle is just so wholesome.
Yeah. It goes to the family drama side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, the investigators set up all their gear. It's kind of like an Insidious, Conjuring kind of vibe. And there's that one investigator who's like up getting readings in a room or something, and he says like something bit him. Mm-hmm. And he lifts up his shirt. It's like the size of a shark bite. I thought that was cool because at this stage of the film, like apart from the tree, like you kind of just hear these whispering voices, and then there's like strange lights and breezes and stuff like that. Like there's nothing that's what I'm trying to say. There's no like demon per se.
Yeah.
But then this guy like just lifts up his shirt, and there's a like chunk. You know,
it's just planting that idea of what the fuck is here.
Yeah, yeah, it's this weird contrast. And of course, that's when you get that steak hallucination, which I do like. Gave me almost like Lost Boys vibes, where he's like eating the chicken drumstick.
Is that a hallucination or does that actually happen?
I was going to ask you that because cause obviously like the mirror scene where he's like picking his face apart was a hallucination. But I don't know, the steak and the maggots in the drumstick, maybe that was actually happening because they don't show it again afterwards.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I just assumed that was real.
Yeah, because, like, how would he be hallucinating? Like, maybe they just have the power to distort his reality.
That's the only thing I'm not so sure about. Yeah, why is he hallucinating? Or maybe he is actually picking his face apart and then being reborn. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. It's cool, though. I can see what you mean. They're like, those practical effects, it looks real rough when it kind of jumps to like the hands coming in front of the dummy, like peeling the skin off. But I did read that almost got the film an R rating. And
I mean, I believe it. It's a visceral scene. It's something you would expect to see in like a Cronenberg movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that was just real nice. And this is another bit that reminded me so much of The Simpsons is when they discover there's like a portal or portals in the house where, you know, you can chuck something into the closet and it'll drop out of the ceiling of the living room.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene in Bad Dream House where Homer, like, chucks an orange or something through the wall, gets a note back. Stop throwing your junk into our dimension. But I do like, though, again, they try and give it a more of, like, a warm undertone where all that jewelry just suddenly drops down. I wonder if that's where, like, Nope got the idea from.
I'll be honest with you, I don't remember that scene.
In Poltergeist. Okay, yeah, like all these watches and rings and pendants like come down and they're comparing them and they're like, oh, some of these are like 100 years old.
Oh, that's right, yeah, okay.
I thought that was quite interesting. So it shows how long like some of these, you know, quote unquote souls have been trapped here.
Well, is that from the souls or is that just sucking them up from the skeletons down below?
Maybe actually. That's just a big metal detector in a wardrobe.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. I didn't consider that. And that's when they contrived the plan for the mother to go in and retrieve the daughter with the rope wrapped around her waist. And I do like that was the son's idea, like, way earlier in the film. And he just kind of, like, offhandedly says it and they don't really take his word for it. But then they're like, you know what, that's not bad.
Well, when a high-pitched psychic medium tells you to do it, it sounds like a better idea.
I did not like her.
You didn't?
She had a voice like Yardley Smith.
Well, I can't, you know, make fun of the woman for the voice that God gave her.
Yeah.
But her performance was, I don't know if it was she was intentionally playing it, but I didn't know whether to trust her or not.
Yeah, yeah, right.
There's a moment where she says, like, when the mum like asks her for help and she's like, okay, but do you promise to like do things that are against your religion and against what you've ever been told? And I'm like, is this bitch about to like turn her into a Satanist or something? You know, this is a cult shit. But yeah, it pays off, I guess.
She was also very contradictory because like throughout the film, the mother's like, go into the light, Carol Ann, it'll lure you back to us. And
no,
then
no, the
she's
mother's
like,
the opposite, right? The mother doesn't want her to go into the light throughout the movie because she thinks it's like heaven.
Well, I don't know because they chop and change. Like the parapsychologist is like, go into the light because that's the way out. So she yells that out to her. But then this medium is like, stay away from the light. Like that's how they're going to lure you in and keep you forever.
Yeah.
Like she's just confusing the poor kid.
And then once she's already in the portal, the parapsychologist or the medium, sorry, then yells out to the ghosts to go into the light. Can you explain that to me? What happened there?
I don't know.
Is that to like...
Is it like a...
Flood it all of a sudden to like create this massive jam in there? It, I don't know.
Is it the opposite of a black hole? And instead of absence of light, there's only light. So they're drawing the evil entities toward it to banish them, but keeping the girl away so they can grab her and...
Maybe? I don't know.
Make it out.
I just don't know. See, I don't know. There are certain things in this movie that went a little bit above my head, and I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I imagine watching this for the first time in the 80s, shit like this hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
You expect to go and see, maybe a movie about ghosts, you know, fucking Amityville had come out by now.
Yeah,
But no, instead of ghosts, it's like a ghostly dimension with these fucking vortex in a wall and when it turns like yellow and almost looks like biological.
Yeah.
It's whack.
And she...
It's almost like sci-fi as well because you've got the portal going in here, out there.
Yeah, like Twilight Zone or something.
Yeah.
I do like though that they come out covered in slime and the mother has like white streaks in her hair.
Yeah, that reminded me of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street. Gray streak. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think they were trying to go for like a whole rebirth metaphor there? Like, because they come out the portal... Attached to a rope, so that's like the umbilical cord.
Ooh.
Covered in the jelly, which is all like the placenta.
Amniotic fluid.
They're not, you know, they're asleep. Their eyes are closed. They're not breathing, essentially. And the dad is there being like, come on, wake up. Come on, you can do it.
Like, yeah, I like that.
And like clearing away the gunk, which is exactly what you do when a child is born.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I didn't really consider that, but...
I can totally. Recognize that I think that's what they were going for. I just don't know why.
Yeah, okay. I think it's just kind of to infer that cycle of life. And if you go with your previous metaphor of the bird being buried and then dug up and my kind of opinion that it's a whole thing's a commentary on the fear of death, and I think it's to kind of say it's just like birth. Like you go back into the earth and, you know, it is what it is. Part of nature.
Oh, yeah. So that makes sense then because the whole first half of the movie is like the fear of death. And then after that, you're trying to say that death is nothing to be like afraid of.
The resistance.
It's just something to it. It's a natural part of life and it could be a birthplace into another.
Mm.
That's some spiritual shit, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm going with.
And not something I believe in at all.
And this is a really interesting point in the film because everything kind of calms down, the dust settles, you get this resolution, but then there's a fourth act almost, like Alien.
Yeah, this is... I thought the movie was done.
Yeah, so much happens as well.
I was stretching, I was getting ready to put the TV off.
Yep, yep. And then all of a sudden, you've got the clown doll attacking the boy, the mother floats up the wall like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
You've got that ghost that appears in the wardrobe and the skeletons come out. By the way, that pool like full of mud reminded me of Drag Me to Hell when she's like trying to give
the grave
the button back or whatever. Yeah, so everything picks up and even like the ending kind of reminded me a little bit of Carrie, but like does the house collapse or does it just disappear?
I think it disappears because it's all with all like the light show and stuff. It's almost like the whole house is pulled into the portal.
Yeah. Just gets like sucked in and...
Yeah. Now all those ghosts have somewhere to live.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It was a lot. A lot to digest when your brain had already like dialed things down, you know, 20 minutes before. But I also love that after that, the family stays at a hotel for the night and they put the TV outside.
Yeah. It's a nice little bit of humor just to end the movie.
Yeah. And I do like that they linger on that as the credits roll. And that kind of made me realize I just love Tobe Hooper endings. Like his final shots of his films are some of my favorites in horror.
Okay. Like, look, he's 2 for 2 in the ones that I've seen so far.
Mm. Very well. But, yeah, what a film. Admittedly, I have not seen any of the sequels. I think there was 2 sequels, and then you had the shitty 2015 remake.
I was about to say, have you seen the remake? What are your thoughts?
I have.
That's all I need to hear.
It was produced by Sam Raimi, so I think it still has the humorous elements, like the original, but it's just, it's bereft of practical effects, and that's what I enjoy most about this film. So, I know I should stop living in the past, but it is what it is. Speaking of which, the practical effects, even though some of them are quite goofy, I thought were pretty good. Like you said, some of it was dated. I think maybe the head in the mirror picking itself apart was a bit rough, but other than that, like the only effects that I thought didn't really hold up were the digital ones.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with most of the practical effects. I think it is just the digital ones that do you struggle nowadays.
Didn't age well.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of long shots, I found. Like, duration wise.
Okay, gotcha.
Where, you know, even the opening shot where there's the TV static and it just like slowly zooms out. And then while the father's asleep in the chair, Carol Ann just like crawls up to it and starts speaking when you can't hear any voices replying at this stage. I thought that was cool.
That reminds me, how, like, when they do the remake, do they just stick with the, like, the whole static TV?
Like, is the communication line? I think so. The main thing I remember from it, which I hate, is that instead of the chairs stacking up all of a sudden.
Oh, there's like magazines, like, or something.
Yeah, they're moving into the house and the kid like turns around, turns back, and all the magazines are like stacked up in a tower.
Okay, because I do like that in this movie, the whole stag thing is a product of like back in the day when it got to a certain time of night, the TV stations would just stop broadcasting, and that's where the static comes from.
Just dead air.
Yeah, it's just like there's no longer a signal, so it's static.
Mm.
Whereas, I don't know how the remake treats it. Do they just turn it to a static channel?
Yeah, I don't know. But I do like in... Unless they use a radio, I can't remember. Because I know in like modern paranormal investigation, they like flip through radio frequencies really quickly with a speaker. And apparently like entities can use that to speak. I don't know how it works.
They'll use any fucking gimmick.
Hey, look, it's better than a fucking gas mask with a hose going to headphones and Insidious.
Yeah, but that's a movie that you can suspend your disbelief when there's people out there trying to sell stuff.
Yeah,
to sell their TV special and be like, hey, we're gonna scan through the radio channels and the ghost is gonna he's gonna pick the words.
Fair. And I do like even the long shot and the slow camera movement when the like parents are smoking weed in the bedroom, because like starts real high, comes down real low. So it's level with the mattress, but then like slowly just pans around to the other side. And I don't know. It's just, I really like slow movement that lets you kind of look around.
Yeah.
In a scene.
I like that. Yeah. I also like how the parents acted in that. Like once the kid sees them, they don't immediately do like, oh shit, no, we've been caught. Or they're not like bad parents. They just kind of treat it as if it's nothing because the kid's not going to know that they're smoking weed.
Yeah.
That's good parenting.
Yeah. I thought they were cool parents.
Yeah.
Father like, gives the kid a piggyback ride back to his bed, teaches him about counting between thunderclaps and lightning flashes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, good lad. The dolly zoom in the hallway was nice.
That's my favorite shot in the entire movie.
Ooh,
and
okay.
I'll just say it now. That's the one I'd frame.
Yeah, okay.
Because that was fucking beautiful.
It was cool.
It was gorgeous.
In fact, it was such a convincing dolly zoom that I wondered if it was just a really long set that she ran down.
I'm pretty sure. I think it was. I think there was just a really long set that they started with it in such a field of view that it looks short, and then that's when they dolly zoom, and it's like it looks like a dream.
But I think like the dolly zoom would defeat the purpose of needing to construct a long set, because it would give the illusion that it's
Then I don't know how they did it.
I don't know. It's cool though.
It just looks beautiful, and I want it.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I didn't notice this on first watch, but I read it and then remembered seeing it a lot, is there's hearts in the set design throughout.
Okay, I'll take your word for that.
There's like hearts on the walls with like posters among like Star Wars and Alien.
Yep. I do love how heavily the son's bedroom like side was Star Wars decorated.
Yeah. The like Darth Vader behind his head. That was cool.
Because not only is it the 80s, it's also Steven Spielberg, who was very good friends with George Lucas.
Oh, okay. Yeah, true. Nice. And then you had like there was a heart lamp, a heart balloon as well. And I believe all of that would have been intentionally done to kind of show, I guess, continue that theme of love, but also that message, like that wholesome kind of message throughout
the life and heart.
Yeah. Yeah, that was just kind of nice touch. Mm. But it was like the OG Poltergeist, you can kind of tell how influential this film was based on the amount of other horror films we've mentioned in this episode.
Yeah.
That like pay homage to it.
All the other stuff that either pay homage to it or just borrow stuff from it or like just take little things and make it their own.
Yeah. You know,
that's always a good sign of a good fucking horror movie.
Yeah, and like I said, there's a lot of comedic moments to it that, like, you know, sometimes you're laughing with it, sometimes you're laughing at it, but I still think it's really, really good and it holds up. So it's a shame that you kind of had it spoiled a bit with its reputation.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if I could just go into it completely blind, maybe I'd like it better, but I think at the end of the day, it's just not my kind of movie.
I think at the heart of it, it's a good story.
Maybe.
But you always say you're not a big fan of haunted house films. So.
But this is kind of barely a haunted house movie. Like, it's got a lot of sci-fi, and I love sci-fi.
Mm.
It's just kind of, maybe it's a weird blend of the two.
I also kind of appreciate that it's got demons, but no possession. Because possession is, you know, overdone by this point.
Very much so. Yeah, I kind of, just now thinking about it, I really like all of the stuff to do with the paranormal in this movie.
Mm.
The bits I don't like are just the family.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just not a big fan of...
Just their dynamic?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of, like, that American family story.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe it's because I'm from a broken family. Who knows? I've just never really been drawn to, like, that style of storytelling.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
Like, yeah. I'm not... This might be controversial. I'm not that big of a Spielberg fanboy, you know? I've maybe seen E.T. once, you know? It's not for me.
E.T. is your go-to example.
That's Spielberg. That's the epitome of Spielberg.
Yeah, fair.
When a movie centers on, like, just a functioning, healthy family going through their life, maybe struggling, I don't care.
Oh, okay. I think I see what you're saying now.
I find broken families more interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like in horror, particularly when it centers on a broken family or, like, a character who has had a traumatic experience, they have like a character arc or some kind of revelation that makes them deserving.
Maybe that's it. There's not really a character arc in this movie.
Mm.
Everyone at the end is kind of the same as the beginning, except they've just left a haunted house.
Gotcha.
They haven't grown as people.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
Maybe that's the reason I don't like it.
So this week in the Deadheads Facebook group, we asked, have you ever had an unexplainable experience at home? And we really only got Michael, longtime listener MDV, who said, not really unexplained, but I've had sleep paralysis where I've woken up in my bed with a dark figure standing over me while I couldn't move at all and just lay there threatening to beat me up. Sorry, oh, while I just lay there threatening to beat it
oh,
up.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, are we sure it's not just his dad? his older brother?
Yeah, dude.
We've talked about it before.
Yeah.
But since then, I found out my brother has had sleep paralysis.
Oh, what was his experience?
Well, he doesn't have the demons. Apparently, all he has is just waking up and not being able to move.
Mm.
And he fucking loves it.
No.
He's a freak. He's a weirdo. Apparently, he wakes up, he can't move, and he's like, yeah, fuck yeah, I can't move. This is great.
It's a high,
and then
it's a rush.
It's like he tries to fight it, and like that's what he finds fun.
Oh,
that's just
dude,
weird, man.
That's terrifying. Yeah. I don't know if I've said it on the pod before, but I've experienced it once, like, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. But yeah, it's not fun. It's scary. And from all accounts I read online as well, it doesn't matter like how you experience it, but everyone just kind of like senses a presence in the room.
Mm,
it's no so thanks. Weird.
No, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't recommend. But I do recommend the 1982 Poltergeist. It's hard to find. I don't think it's on streaming. I had the DVD that we watched, but I have seen that it's getting a re-release. In fact, I think it had a 4K re-release just recently, so I might need to cop one. Okay. See it in its remastered glory. But yeah. Have you ever experienced anything unexplainable in your house or anyone you know or have lived with?
I mean, the people I've lived with, yeah, sure, they've had stuff which I've talked about before.
Mm.
But me, not so much. Like, I love my partner. She's great and I love her. But sometimes a light will be left on or things will move or maybe a thing won't be locked and I didn't do it, you know, and she says she didn't do it. And so I have to believe her. So yes, there is a ghostly presence that's doing certain things.
Yep.
But really, I think she's just forgetting.
I mean, you also used to have like some footsteps here and there in the house, but that was when you first moved in, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, ever since we bought the house, you know. No issues. They want us to live here, I guess.
Yeah.
Or it's just because we own them now. You know, they can't rebel against their masters. What about you? Any unexplained absences?
I mean, I've touched on some of the kind of like paranormal, I guess, experiences I've had before when I was younger. But yeah, not really unexplainable to my knowledge. In fact, the house I'm living at now, I've been there for like 8 years or so, like moved out and then came back in, and it's probably the most uneventful house that I've lived at in my life, to be honest.
You're going to have to move. Move out. Seek out a haunted house. It's getting too boring.
Yeah, maybe for episode 100 we'll like, I don't know, record in a cemetery or something like that. You know what? I've actually had this idea. We'd have to discuss the logistics of it, but there's like a fake like haunted house attraction in the city.
Yeah, okay.
And you just like walk through and it's like scary set design and people dressed up jump out.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I was like, if we could like rig up lapel mics or something and like have someone come along and film us on their phone, like go through that. If we could somehow make that interesting to translate to like purely audio format for like streaming services and then just upload it on YouTube, that'd be cool.
I don't think there would be, because I'm the type of guy who doesn't react to things.
Mm.
Like if something jumps out at me, I don't know. I feel like I don't really react so much. And
what
so,
if you're not expecting it?
Even then, I think I'm pretty controlled in my reactions.
Okay.
Alex tries to scare me occasionally. She can't do it. She's very jumpy. I'm just not a jumpy guy.
My mom is super easy to scare because I do it like without trying.
Yeah.
I'll come home from work like on a late shift and she'll be outside listening to something or watching something so loud that she doesn't hear me open the door and close it again. And I just appear behind her and she like jolts.
Right.
That's great. But
I mean, there would be nothing stopping us from filming in a cemetery because...
We wouldn't be disrespectful.
No, of course not. We just, you know, sink some cans and party till the sun comes up with the ghosts.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know what we're going to do. It's slowly approaching. We're over halfway. We've got to think of something cool.
Yeah.
It's got to pay off because we've talked up to it now.
I mean, if anyone has any ideas, they could send it to deadhousepod@hotmail.com.
Smooth.
For a 100th episode special.
Yeah, cameo.
Yeah, but who knows?
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to find out.
Yep.
But if you enjoyed listening to us talk about Poltergeist, then we drop a new episode every Monday. Who knows what next week will be? I don't. I'm sure Dylan does. But in the meantime, you can catch us on Deadhouse or Deadhouse Pod, or we got that Deadheads Facebook group.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we'll be right back.